Kimberly Bowen came to the Chattanooga area last year to take a job with Unum. These days, she is Vice President and Global Head of Talent Acquisition at the Fortune 500 insurance company. Kimberly says leaders in the workplace are at their most effective when they get to know their employees as individuals. She shared her story and her insights when she recently stopped by Scenic Roots. Kimberly, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
How long have you been with Unum?
Just about 10 months.
And what brought you there?
The opportunity to head up their talent acquisition department. So I saw the job online. I am originally from Oberlin, Ohio, and was working in downtown Cleveland and was ready for my next opportunity. And so I saw the posting on LinkedIn, like most people, when they're looking for a job, they go to LinkedIn. And it looked like the next step in the evolution of my career. And so I applied. I was brought in for a face-to-face interview. And I wasn't exactly sold on Chattanooga yet, but once I got here and I interviewed with all of the leadership at Unum, that sealed the deal for me. And I knew that was a company I wanted to be a part of.
And Unum has been around for a long time.
Over 170 years. Longer than any of us are going to live. So yes, it's been around for a long time.
That's quite a history to step into coming here.
Well, what was exciting about it was at the time that I was brought on, and really even continuing today, the company was at a place of transformation. And that is what really excited me, was that even for a company that was 170 years old or over 170 years old, they recognized that the market is shifting and changing. And the insurance industry is a very old industry to begin with. But they realized that if they wanted to maintain their competitive advantage, they needed to make some changes. And they were ready to do that. And bringing on the right talent to help them achieve that strategy was where they were when I interviewed.
So how do you see your role in helping them do that?
What's changed today, really, is that businesses no longer dictate their services to the masses. It's a customer-driven market. No matter what industry you're in, the customer really drives the expectations and the strategy for that organization and defines what services they should make available. And so Unum had recognized that that shift in becoming really a customer-centric organization was more important than anything in this day and age. That meant bringing on different talent, developing departments that perhaps had never existed before, being able to offer services that they had never offered before. And so this really required them to look at their workforce and figure out where those gaps were. And so they needed somebody that was going to help them identify those and then help them create a strategy that would allow them to go into the marketplace and competitively attract that talent.
You've been here for 10 months. Give me an example of one of those gaps and a strategy that you are developing or now starting to implement to try to fill that gap.
Sure. So one of the things that was pretty apparent to me when I came is that we really had not leveraged social media as well as we could have. I was very familiar with Unum only because Unum had been my disability provider throughout my career working for other companies. But unless you've had that interaction, you may not know who Unum is. And so having that employer brand really expand, not just here within the Chattanooga market, but really nationally and globally, is key to being able to attract talent. Because the workforce is changing. It's no longer limited to just the Chattanooga area. We have folks that work remotely as well. And so you can really meet that talent wherever they are, depending on your business and how you're structured. But for us, we really want to be able to get the best talent. And so leveraging and leaning into social media platforms in a way that we haven't done in the past, having a stronger presence on LinkedIn, utilizing our Facebook and Instagram pages to connect with talent is another great way to build that pipeline. And we just had not done a really good job of that in the past. We're moving into that space in 2020.
And another thing that customers value is knowing about a workplace culture and what the values of that workplace culture are, not only stated, but in practice.
Yes. One of the things that we're able to do through that platform is communicate all of those things. And of course, Unum has a very strong culture. We are Unum. that really is representative of our customer focus and the fact that everything we do puts the customer at the center. We take care of our people. We care about the communities that we work in. We are striving to take smart risk. We encourage diversity and inclusion. Unlike a lot of organizations that I've worked for, that was one of the things I was very impressed with when I interviewed, was the fact that there was a true commitment from the top all the way down to frontline to make diversity and inclusion really a key stake for us. And so for me, that was important. And that really shaped my decision to come. And that may shape others' decision to come work at Unum as well. So we make sure that there's a highlight and a spotlight on how important that is to us.
Talk to me more about diversity and inclusion, how you see that at Unum, and what at Unum impressed you about it.
So I think one of the things that was important to me was that this wasn't just a tagline on a poster hanging in the hallway. I could actually see it living and breathing as I walked through the building. The individuals that I interviewed with were a diverse interview panel. And so this wasn't just something that people spoke about, but I could see with my own eyes that from a race and ethnicity, gender, the diversity was there. And then in the way that people work and collaborate, there is a respect for diversity of thought. And oftentimes that gets lost as well. We focus so much on race, gender, veteran status, ability status, but it's that diversity of thought and everyone's perspective and opinion being valued and people having space to share that. And so I could see that in my interactions, even through my interview. And then I definitely saw that when I started within my first couple of weeks.
And you have to have both, don't you, for both of them to succeed?
You absolutely do. And I think that's where really that's the inclusive part. That's the inclusion. I think where a lot of companies focus is on the diversity. We have a little bit of a different philosophy around this, as the head of our inclusion and diversity office would say. We focus on inclusion and the diversity will come. So we really put inclusion first. And how do we create an environment where people feel respected, where people feel valued, where their differences are not looked at as a liability, but they're looked at as an advantage? And we work very hard every day to create that kind of environment at every level within our workforce.
And then beyond that, there are things that are universal. Getting to know your colleagues on a team.
Yes, absolutely. As we think about leadership and how we want our employees to show up every day, it's really important for us as leaders to display those behaviors. And so taking the time to get to know your teams, taking the time to ask about their weekend and how's the dog and how was that family vacation you took a week ago? And yes, I'd love to see those pictures. Spending that time and making that kind of investment in your people, that also adds to the culture. That also adds to the inclusive feeling.
And not in a superficial, perfunctory way.
Correct. Correct. You have to be very intentional. And this is one of the things that I do. And I try to model that behavior for others. So I recently took on a larger role. But when I started, I had a team of about 30 people. And I intentionally set up 15-minute meetings with every single member of that team once a quarter. And those 15 minutes are reserved just to talk about life. How are you? How are the kids? I know some of their hobbies, so we talk about that. I know that some of them take vacations, some of them participate in marathons. And so we talk about those things and just to get a sense of how they're doing. There's also some time for them to ask any questions as we're doing our work and strategies change and new things are rolled out. They might have questions, and sometimes public forums and in big meetings, people aren't always comfortable to ask questions. And so you have to respect that maybe that's not the right setting. So these 15 minutes, I dedicate some time for them to ask me directly if they have questions about the strategy or decisions that have recently been made for our department or about our work. And so I take the time to answer those as well.
If you want to have an open door policy, make sure that you have a lot of open doors.
That's right. That's right. Well, and we don't have doors, so because we are open concept and flex seating in our newly remodeled space here in Chattanooga. So there's no doors. People can walk right up and talk to me at any time.
And it also seems to be important from what you're saying to avoid having a one-size-fits-all leadership style, a one-size-fits-all toolkit to fix whatever problems arise during the day, during the week.
That's correct. I think that there are some key pieces of leadership that are universal, but there are certainly some areas where you've got to deploy a different strategy. And getting to know your employees and understanding what motivates them, what is going to encourage that engagement, then that's what you need to bring forward as a leader. And don't just assume that public recognition for a job well done is what's going to be pleasing for one employee. Maybe that's great for Sally Sue, but John does not want the whole team to know that he took on extra work because he's humble. It embarrasses him, and he just wants to quietly perform well, and your private thank you is enough. So you've got to know where those boundaries are with your employees and then act accordingly.
How did you get into this career?
So interestingly enough, I fell into it like a lot of people in HR. Almost everybody I know had never set out to be in HR. We all just kind of stumbled into it. But I actually had a 10-year career in retail management. And so I worked for some pretty big companies, The Gap, Victoria's Secret, over the years. And I knew that long term, that wasn't where I wanted to be, but I really wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And I was young, mid to late 20s at the time. And so spent a little bit of time trying to figure out what my next move would be. What really worked for me is I realized I was asking the wrong question, and not what did I want to do, but who did I want to be? And once I started asking myself that question, then I was able to really point my toes in the right direction. And I realized I wanted to be in a corporate setting. I wanted to be able to influence strategy, and specifically the people strategy. And so that's really what started me down the path of HR. And so I transitioned from retail and I took on an entry-level recruiter / HR generalist role. And I was recruiting for nurses' aides, dietary staff in a nursing home. So when I talk to my recruiters and sometimes they have stories about their challenges, I remind them that I completely understand. And I have been in their shoes, and I know what it is like to recruit for some tough-to-fill roles. And so I started in that position and gradually worked my way up to an HR manager, HR business partner. But I continued to gravitate towards the talent acquisition side. There was something really powerful about being able to attract the right talent and make that match between the company and the new hire. And not only make that match, but then watch that person flourish in that role and then advance throughout their career within the organization. And sometimes people leave. It doesn't always turn into a 3 or 4 or 10 year opportunity, but even watching the contributions that they make to the organization while they're there, I'm very proud of that. And I appreciate being part of that.
What's it like to be a mentor?
It's fulfilling and rewarding. I think that it's also challenging because sometimes as mentors, we see things in people that they don't see in themselves. And I think that's the hard part, is trying to get them to see. And sometimes it's about getting them to see something that is there, but sometimes it's also about helping them to understand that what they think is there also isn't. And so I've mentored folks who were very clear about what they wanted to do, and the skills and the capabilities to do that and the opportunities were there. But I've also mentored people who were on one path and it was pretty clear and apparent that they needed to be on another. And so kind of helping them work through that and realize that that's the challenge. But again, it's rewarding because when that happens and they get on the right path and then you see them be successful, there's no better feeling.
Mentoring matters for everybody. I'm just curious, asking as an African-American woman.
Yes.
In corporate America, ending up at a place like Unum, talk to me about that experience of being mentored.
Yes.
And then being a mentor now.
Yes. So I was very fortunate that when I actually started my career, the individual that took a chance on me and hired me as a recruiter slash generalist, she was my first mentor. She was the head of HR for the nursing home that I was employed at. And she is the one who taught me everything I know about HR and really my business acumen and really understanding how things work and how important communication skills were, how important it was to be able to influence people in a positive way and in the right way to drive a strategy forward. And so those are some of the things that I think about when I go to mentor someone, is what do they need to help them move the dial on their career and develop themselves as not only a key contributor to the organization, but what leadership skills do they need to have? What business acumen do they need to improve upon? Everyone should have a mentor. I would not have gotten to where I am in my career today if I did not have mentors along the way. And so my very first mentor, I learned very quickly that I did not want to lose that throughout my career. So even though I moved on from that organization and went to work for others, I actively sought out mentors. I've been very fortunate. I would encourage anyone that is working in corporate America, that's going to school, that is in a job and they're trying to advance, seek out a mentor. That's important because you need somebody that can really help you work through some of those challenges that you're going to face in terms of how do I get my voice heard? How do I ensure that my talent is seen? Because oftentimes we can be head down working, and especially as women, and also I will say as African American women, we don't always advocate for ourselves. We are not always raising our hand to say, hey, look what I did. And some of that is cultural, some of that is, I think, just social, but we don't advocate for ourselves the way that we should. And we just assume that our work will speak for itself. And that's simply not true in every situation. And so how do you do that? And I struggled with that myself because I was taught that there's no I in team and it's not all about me. And so how do you detract from the team and raise your hand and say, hey, look at what I did? And so that was something that my mentors helped me with throughout my career. They helped me have those conversations in a way that were professional, that demonstrated my role in the success and didn't take away from what the team had accomplished, but it still brought some highlights to my work.
What inspires you?
I think watching people have a light bulb moment, that inspires me. When people get it, for a long time, I thought I wanted to be a teacher. I think that element is in my personality. And so there's something very rewarding when I see somebody understand it, when they get it. Now I see the big picture, all the puzzle pieces have now come together and I see it. And when that moment happens, that lights a fire in me and it pushes me to do more, give them more, teach them more. And so I love when I experience that.
And closing in on a year now in Chattanooga, how has this place become home for you?
As I mentioned earlier, I wasn't 100% sold on Chattanooga. I knew very little about the city. I think like most people that aren't from here and don't grow up here, Chattanooga choo-choo was as far as it got for me. And so when I came down for my interview and subsequently after that, I had an opportunity to explore the city and get to know sort of what was happening and the differences and changes that have happened over the recent years. And so that was very exciting because it felt very much like Chattanooga is in a renaissance period. And I had experienced that in Cleveland. If you know anything about Cleveland, Ohio, it was not a great city. It had, you know, its challenges. And then a few things happened. LeBron came back and we won the bid for the Republican National Convention. And those two events combined sort of catapulted the city into its own renaissance period, where new restaurants and hotels and businesses began to pop up in what felt like overnight. And so the city was revitalized. So I recognized elements of that when I was here in Chattanooga visiting and learning a little bit about the city. That got me really excited. It just felt like a great place to raise a family. And it felt very family oriented, which was important to me because that was very similar to the town that I came from.
All right. Kimberly, thanks so much.
Thank you.